This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for December 23rd, 2011. I'm Natalie Pinchem. Topics covered in this podcast are traumatic brain injury and vascular disorders. Are routine repeat imaging and intensive care unit admission necessary in mild traumatic brain injury? A clinical article by Chad Washington and Robert Grubb Jr. More than 1.5 million Americans suffer a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, each year. 75% of these injuries are mild. The purpose of this study was to determine if there exists a subpopulation of patients with mild TBI and intracranial hemorrhage that does not require automatic repeat brain imaging or admission to an intensive care unit. The authors conducted a retrospective review of all patients admitted over a 2-year period and meeting the following criteria. Admission Glasgow Coma Scale score greater than or equal to 13. An isolated head injury. Initial head CT positive for intracranial hemorrhage. And an initial management plan that was non-operative. Primary outcomes included a neurological decline, injury progression on repeat imaging, and the need for neurosurgical intervention. 321 of 1,101 cases met the inclusion criteria for the study. Only 4 patients, or 1%, suffered a neurological decline, and 4 required non-emergent neurosurgical intervention. Based on imaging, the rate of injury progression was 6%. These results demonstrate that the majority of patients with mild TBI have a good outcome. Patients with mild TBI and a convexity subarachnoid hemorrhage, small contusion, or small subdural hematoma do not require admission to an intensive care unit or repeat imaging in the absence of a neurological decline. Tandem middle cerebral artery internal carotid artery occlusions. Reduced occlusion to revascularization time using a trans-anterior communicating artery approach with a penumbra device. A report of 2 cases by David Padolino and Eric Deshays. Rapidly restoring cerebral circulation in tandem extracranial and intracranial acute thromboembolic occlusions can be challenging. Taking advantage of collateral pathways in the circle of Willis for intracranial thrombectomy can reduce the occlusion to revascularization time significantly, thereby protecting brain tissue from ischemic injury. In this report, the authors were able to rapidly revascularize the occluded middle cerebral artery before revascularizing the ipsilateral cervical internal carotid artery occlusion in 2 patients. They first crossed the anterior communicating artery from the contralateral internal carotid artery using a 0.026-inch diameter penumbra catheter for mechanical and thrombolytic therapy. The time to revascularization was an estimated 72 minutes faster in one patient and 47 minutes faster in the other patient by using this method than would have been possible with the direct approach through the occluded ipsilateral cervical internal carotid artery. Once the collateral intracranial circulation was restored, the extracranial internal carotid artery occlusion was treated with stent placement last, eliminating the need to cross the stent to treat the intracranial occlusion. Both patients had improvement in their NIH stroke scale scores after intervention, and neither patient suffered any complications from the intervention. Neither patient had complete middle cerebral artery territory strokes on follow-up MR images of the brain. Consistent focal cerebral ischemia without posterior cerebral artery occlusion and its real-time monitoring in an intraluminal suture model in mice. A laboratory investigation by Yosuke Akamatsu and colleagues. In the intraluminal suture model of middle cerebral artery occlusion in mice, disturbance of blood flow from the internal carotid artery to the posterior cerebral artery may affect the size of the infarction. In this study, posterior cerebral artery involvement in the model was investigated and modified for consistent middle cerebral artery occlusion without involving the posterior cerebral artery territory. C57BL/6 mice were randomly divided into four groups according to the length of coating over the tip of the suture, 1, 2, 3, or 4 millimeters. They were subjected to transient middle cerebral artery occlusion. Topographical cerebral blood flow was monitored by laser speckle flowmetry. The authors found that the groups with 1 and 2 millimeters of coating showed all lesions in the middle cerebral artery territory. In the groups with 3 and 4 millimeters of coating, 62.5% and 75% of animals showed lesions in both the middle and posterior cerebral artery territories. Other mice in these groups had lesions in the middle cerebral artery territory. Laser speckle flowmetry was useful in distinguishing whether the posterior cerebral artery territory would undergo infarction. Sutures with 1 to 2 millimeters of coating appeared to be optimal to produce consistent middle cerebral artery occlusion without involving the posterior cerebral artery territory. Laser speckle flowmetry could predict the territory of infarction and improve the consistency of the infarct size. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the newly launched American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.